Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Willy Klinger from the Austrian Wine Marketing Board. How are you, Willy?
Great. It's a great show this year at London Wine Trade Fair.
Yeah, well, we're recording this at the London Wine Fair, so it's doing quite well. This is day two, and I've just sat down.
Many more people than last year. You remember this was the volcanic problem with the ashes in the air and flights cancelled. So this year is really what London Wine Trade Fair should be.
Yes, not as busy as maybe a couple of years ago, I think. But
The Hammersmith there was really packed, and it was a smaller venue. But I think it's getting momentum now.
Fantastic. What we're going to talk about today is not the London International Wine Fair, but we're going to be talking about Austrian wines. And in particular today, we're going to have a quick overview of the history of Austrian wines and some of the more indigenous grape varieties that are grown there or grape varieties that are grown in Austria that aren't as common as those of us who are used to sort of French grape varieties. But Austria's been making wine for quite a while, hasn't it, Willy?
We had a tasting now in the United States where we advertised we have 3,000 years of experience, which is the maximum we can imagine. It's we have traces from wine growing in what today is Austria in pre-Roman times. You know, the Roman Empire went until the Danube. So the Danube crossing Austria was the northern border of the Roman Empire, and the Romans brought then modern version of wine growing to Austria. There was a kind of collapse when the Roman Empire collapsed and the Germanic tribes were crossing the Danube.
Yeah, yeah.
And so wine growing is not very favorable because it's long-term business. And when times are really tough, like in the migration times after the collapse of the Roman Empire, there was a certain decline of the wine growing in Austria. And it took until the Middle Ages, with the influence of the French monasteries, that a new and then a decisive revival of the wine culture in Austria occurred. You must imagine that in the 11th century, 12th century, monks from Burgundy, especially Citeaux, the Cistercian monks,
yep.
Those were the monks who had the Clos de Vougeot. For the wine lovers, Clos de Vougeot is one Grand Cru in Burgundy.
Yep.
And there's a wine museum that everybody should see because the presses they have with the tree presses, gigantic,
yeah,
big
I've
presses.
Been there, yeah, seen it. Yeah.
These definitely was the state of the art of winemaking in the Middle Ages. So when those guys founded monasteries all over Germany and Austria and then into Hungary, in the 11th and 12th century, Christianization, yeah? The abbots of Austria, of Germany and Hungary, they had to visit the mother abbey from time to time, otherwise they would have developed a different religion.
Yep.
So there was spiritual purposes for this, but also economic. They had to report. And they definitely got to know their Burgundian high quality wines, and they said, I also want to plant vineyards, and I definitely took experts from Burgundy to what is today's Austria and planted vineyards. We have records from there, Thermenregion, also kind of Danube areas were planted from the Cistercian, Benedictine, and Augustine canon monks in the Middle Ages, and so we have this very expert and professional wine growing starting in the Middle Ages in Austria.
So was there no winemaking really till the Middle Ages, or was it just very...
No, as I said, there was winemaking before, even significant winemaking. We have found seeds, grape seeds, from Celtic times, you know, before the Romans. There already was wine growing in Austria. But we have to imagine that this was a little bit on a primitive status with little knowledge about. And we wouldn't taste these wines. I would love to, but was it wine what they drank or wine-related drinks? I don't know.
Yeah.
In Roman times, we must know, certainly, because there was legends of Roman armies stationed on the Danube forming the northern empire, the Limes, as it was called. And these guys were not very fond of being up there in the far from home. King Marco Aurel was responsible for significant plantings in Roman times. So it's not new. But the professional status of a more modern winemaking, having to do with today's winemaking, was really set in the Middle Ages.
And has it been a nice, steady progression since then? Or
yeah, it was without interruption, but there were highs and lows. Because at some point, there were economic crises, wars, the 30 Years' War. You know, Europe was also paying a high price for the development until today's peaceful United Europe with all the problems we have. But there's nothing against what happened in the centuries before. So there was always war times, the pest, the Turks were coming and so on. It was really always a threat to this local culture, you know. And then at some point, there was also a kind of mini ice age.
Mini ice age
where wine growing went back in Austria especially. And then the beer brewing started.
Germans.
And when the beer brewing started in Austria, Germany, everywhere, people drank much more beer. Beer was much more in fashion.
Yep.
Never wine lost completely. So I think then in the 19th century, a new flourishing time came for wine in Austria.
Okay. And Austria is quite a big drinker of their own wines. In your presentation, you sort of gave us some modern day production and consumption figures.
Yeah, but still, you know, for a small country like Austria, we are not one of the big countries anymore. We were once an empire,
Austrian-Hungarian Empire.
Yeah, until 1918. But nowadays we are a small country, very successful, economically very well set, and a wealthy country. But in terms of wine growing, we are a little less than 1% of world production of wine. Still.
Yep.
250 million liters.
It's a lot of wine, though. But
that's a lot of wine.
How many people?
8 million people.
8 million people.
The consumption in Austria is the same. So we drink 250 million liters. So you would ask, Chris, why the hell would you go to London Wine Trade Fair to market wine? Yeah, this is clear because we import also some wine. And whereas we drink what we produce, we import. And so we have to export what we import.
Yep.
70 million liters.
Okay, now that makes sense. So you export about 70 million, you import about 70 million.
This is ideally, yeah?
Yeah. Just before we crack onto the grape varieties, one of the big historical points, a lot of people, when I first came to Europe, were talking about Austrian wine was the scandal in 1985.
There are wine scandals, you know. There are wine scandals all the time. Remember, in 1986, Italy had a methanol scandal where 18 people died, and this was much more significant than our little glycol scandal. A few people alienated their wines, putting antifreeze in to make them seem richer. Nobody was injured, or so it was not dangerous. You would die from alcohol before you had any traces of poisoning from the substance. But still, it was a big scandal. Austria really punished them hard and went to jail.
Yep.
But this was the first information for so many foreign markets about Austrian wine. And they were laughing and saying, oh, they have to put antifreeze in the wine. It's clear, how can you make wine in the Alps?
Yeah,
but I have to tell you, the places where we ski in the west of Austria, the Alps, don't make wine. We make the wine in the east of the country, northeast, southeast. And these are under heavy influence of the Pannonian climate where we get very nice mature grapes.
So the old scandal in 85 sort of hurt your exports.
Yeah, we disappeared from the markets, but I think we did not have significant exports, just a little bulk wine and so on. And so nowadays, within the country and from experts from abroad, this crisis in 1985 is perceived as the starting point for a new, tremendous quality offensive that now peaks into great success in tastings. We have won 29 gold medals here in the Wine Challenge, which is significant. We are really getting high points, high praise from all journalists in all over the world recently. So this was set, and this was really started with the crisis. A crisis means always a new possibility,
new
start.
Gives you a good shake-up, and then you reassess
Because, if this is what we should tell our listeners, if you want to drink good wine from reliable producers, really significant wine that counts, you know, not only industrially produced mass wine, then you should pay a minimum of a price. You know, I'm not talking about excesses like first growth Bordeaux today, where we all can imagine that even we experts would hardly drink them anymore. I had every thinkable, possible great wine in the world in my life because I'm 27 years in the business now.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, our young people, what would they learn drinking first growth Bordeaux? It would hardly happen when they start at 1,200 euros now with the 210.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's an actual exaggeration. No Austrian wine is up there, you know. I mean, it's just reasonable prices. But if you are below £10 in retail, there's hardly anything to find from Austria because we are very family-driven, handmade wines, really true wines, low yields. And you cannot, you should pay a minimum of £10-15 for a good bottle of Austrian wine. And then we can discuss okay. about the quality and the satisfaction you get out from it.
Let's have a look at some of the grape varieties. Obviously, the big grape variety from Austria is Grüner Veltliner. Have I pronounced it right?
Perfect. You are really an expert already, you know. First of all, the U, you know, it's a sound that is in France. They have U's, and so we too have Grüner means green.
Yep.
Veltliner is referring to a region, Veltliner, but it's only the word. There's no link. Yeah.
Okay.
So Grüner Veltliner is Austria's most planted grape variety. 30% of all Austrian vineyards. We have 46,000 hectares. A third of it is Grüner Veltliner. Yeah. So Grüner Veltliner is a white, very versatile. I always say it's like BMW. Although there are Audi, it can also be Audi. But BMW would be 3, 5, and 7. So you have crisp, light Grüner Veltliners that go well with shellfish and so on. It's very nice summer wines. Then you have the classic style that's really a little bit richer, but still bone dry, very good food companion.
Bit more alcohol.
Bit more alcohol, 12.5, spicier. Yeah. And then you have the late harvesters, going to be still dry. And they are among the great white wines of the world that can age, you know, can age them for 10, 20 years with ease. There was the London tasting in 2002 where some of the best tasters of Masters of Wine and great writers involved. The Brits had set it up, this tasting Austrian wines against the rest of the world, including Great Burgundies. And then we had articles in Financial Times and all the leading wine magazines about that in 2002, that Austria's Grüner Veltliner in this tasting had the four first places. And there were 7 Austrian wines among the first 10. So this is the 7. Yeah, I would say BMW 7. Yeah, yeah. You know? This is the really important white wine that can age and that is well. You drink them in bigger glasses. It can serve them on a lobster, a very good food companion.
What's its structure? What is it? You sort of talked about the richness coming through, your BMW 3, 5, and 7 series.
But it's always balanced by a great acidity. And this is the secret, you know. The secret is, and this comes from Austria's geographical position. It's relatively northern areas. A latitude is between Burgundy and Champagne. So it's quite in the north, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
And then...
it's quite continental, though, isn't it?
It's quite continental. We get this hot air from Hungary, so we get very mature grapes easily, but it's balanced by the high acidity, and this comes from the cool winds from the north flowing in. So it's very important during August, September, towards harvest time, when we get 30 degrees and even more in the vineyards, during the day, that in the night, you know, would it stay warm in the night, let's say 20 degrees in the night, like in southern countries, the acidity would go down dramatically and you would have a very heady and cloying wine, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So in Austria, on the other side, you have this cool influence from the north through valleys. You get the cool winds and cool air. So the grapes go down under 10 degrees centigrade, 5 degrees centigrade, and then in the it heats up again. This is responsible, the heating and cooling in September gives this wonderful aromas, makes the wine so crisp. That's the uniqueness of the Austrian white wines, not only of Grüner, because we have also Riesling. Mm. We are one of the great Riesling nations also, although we have very little, only 4%.
Yeah, okay. And the wines we tasted, because I did a tasting with you just before we did this recording, we tasted 9 wines with a range of varieties, and acidity was a hallmark of the wines. You know, the reds weren't big, heavy wines. They had a bit of flavor and character going on, but they had a nice defining acidity to them. You know, it was quite a clean...
Clear, because what I said for red wines, climate-wise, is always true. It's also true for the reds. Mm-hmm. Although the red wine areas are further to the east, you know, it's further to the Hungarian border where we grow the reds.
And that's because the Hungarian plain's quite hot, isn't it?
Quite hot, quite continental.
Very continental, yeah.
So we call it Pannonian climate. That means Eastern Austria, Slovakia, Western Hungary, and going down even to the Northern Balkans. This is referred to as the Pannonian climate. And here you have quite hot summers, but still the nights can be very cool. So even our reds are very aromatic, not too heavy.
Okay. We won't touch on some of the other great varieties like Riesling and Sauvignon Blanc because we sort of know them. I did notice the Sauvignon Blanc you did give us to try had quite a lot of reduction on the nose, you know.
Yep.
Especially on the finish as well, which gave a real tang to it, which quite enjoyable, but...
This is Styria. This is in the south of Austria at the Slovenian border. Slovenia is the neighbor country to the south, so it's Italy from Tyrol and Carinthia, but where we grow wine in Styria, further to the east, our southern neighbor is Slovenia. And in Styria, we have these shell limestone soils.
Yep.
And there, Sauvignon is ideal. But it gets this mineral character, this kind of smoky, reductive. And the wine you had was a 2010. It's a bit too young, you know, because together with the Loire Sauvignons from Sancerre and Puy-Fumé, the great mineral wines need a lot of time to develop their complexity. At the beginning, they might be rather reductive. This was the case with Grasensberg, what we had.
Yeah, I thought it might have been the fact that because it's on shell and limestone, not a lot of nitrogen in the soil, which can create problems with fermentation, which is where some of that comes from. But let's move on to the another grape.
Zweigelt is the first red in Austria. Zweigelt is 12% of Austria's vineyards is planted with Zweigelt. It's a very interesting Austrian grape variety. That was it is a cross. The Institute of Klosterneuburg, the oldest wine school in the world, is also a center for grape breeding since 100 years. And Professor Zweigelt was the leader in the 20s of the last century. And he made this cross out of two other grape varieties of Austria, St. Laurin and Blaufränkisch.
Yep.
And the cross between the two is the Zweigelt grape, which since 30, 40 years is a great success in Austria. Yeah, and the wines are very lush and very fruit-driven,
quite
spicy also, peppery. Yeah.
When I first smelled it, I just wrote down candy floss. Had a real candy floss, but that burnt off, and then you got that sort of red berry sort of flavors coming through.
And this was first grape variety in red, Austrian grape variety. The second was Blaufränkisch.
Yeah.
Yeah, Blaufränkisch is what is called Lemberger in Germany and Keck-Francorchia in Hungary and Franconia in Italy. So, but it's an Austrian grape, and it's growing mainly in Burgenland. Burgenland is the easternmost federal country of Austria, to the Hungarian border.
Yep.
And we have three regions for it. Blaufränkisch is a very, very sophisticated grape, high acidity, very berry fruit nose, you know, a very distinct nose. And
quite brambly.
A bit for the connoisseurs, because it's a bit tougher than the Zweigelt. Zweigelt is smoother. Yeah. Did you feel that?
Yeah, no, I said it was quite balanced. Yeah. The other one was, I thought the Zweigelt had sort of lower acidity and lower tannins, whereas
I was going to say this, yeah. The Blaufränkisch is a little bit more
punchier
with the acidity. It's very long aging, beautiful, And I think this could be the red wine ambassador for Austria in this market, because people are looking for new, interesting grape varieties and this very nice autochthonous grape variety. We were having a discussion on Monday about that and in the Institute of Masters of Wine, and I think the Blaufränkisch will come. I was in a restaurant yesterday, Galvin La Chapelle, and he has a six-course tasting menu. And he served a Blaufränkisch from the area of Mittelburgenland with his tasting menu. So we are very proud that the Austrian red wines finally have landed also in the market. You know?
Before we recorded the show, I tasted a range of wines with you. And the one I liked the most was actually St. Laurent, which is, you said it was a relation to Pinot Noir.
Yeah, it's a descendant of Pinot Noir. It's a little bit darker in color than most of the Pinot Noirs, and it's a bit maybe deep cherry fruited.
Yeah, black cherry.
Yeah, black cherry. Did you get that in the tasting? Yeah. And then it has some tannin, and it's a substantial wine. Maybe Pinot Noir is a little bit more refined, but this is a bunch of wine, really something that you would serve on a game dish or on a red meat dish. Very good food companion. You know?
I thought it reminded me a lot of it, like a Central Otago Pinot, which has got that black cherry. But yeah, the St. Laurent had a really nice floral note that came through on the wine, which you don't really see.
It is. This comes also from the region it is grown. And this is Thermenregion in the south of Vienna. They have gravel soils, and the St. Laurent is ideal there. You know, grape varieties have different expressions according to the regions they are grown in. And Thermenregion is a stronghold in Austria for the St. Laurent grape.
Okay, well, we're going to talk a bit about regions in a minute, but I just wanted to finish up on some of the other grape varieties. I can't even pronounce that one.
That was the Semling or Scheurebe.
Yeah, what is that?
This is a grape variety that's also home in Germany. Mr. Scheu, bred it in the 20th century. But the typology of wines that were represented by the Scheurebe and a Pinot Noir in the end were sweet wines.
Yep.
And we should, I think, talk a little bit about the sweet wines, also related to the area they're grown in, because Austria, and especially Burgenland, which is the easternmost country, they have a big lake there, a steppe lake that's only a meter deep.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the second biggest steppe lake of Central Europe.
Steppe lake?
Steppe lake means in the plain.
Okay, yeah.
In a plain with belts of reed, kilometers of reed surrounding it. Yeah, reed is.
I know what reeds are.
This gives so much humidity. The surface is big, you know, and the sun evaporating the water, and this is an ideal terroir for the creation of sweet wines, because the grapes in the near the lake are affected by the humidity and affected by the noble rot.
Yep, botrytis.
Botrytis, we call it, noble rot. So our listeners must think of a fungus, a mushroom attacking the grape skins, perforating them so that the water evaporates and the grapes shrink. And so the must coming out from these grapes, like raisins, you know.
The ugliest looking grapes.
but the wine is tasting so wonderfully sweet. You know, we call it Austria's liquid gold, you know. But we're not the only ones of making wines like this. Think of Sauternes or Tokaj in Hungary.
Yep.
So, but we can do world class, we call it Bärenauslese or Trockenbärenauslese.
Yeah, very similar to Germany.
BA and TBA.
Yeah.
Like the Germans. So the grapes shrink, and according to the level of sugar, it's either a Bärenauslese or a Trockenbärenauslese.
What does Bärenauslese and Trockenbärenauslese mean?
If the grape must has 25 to 30% sugar in the must, it's a Bärenauslese in Austria. Over 30% sugar and there, a spoon would get stuck, is a Trockenbärenauslese.
Okay, so it's
dry berry selection, you would call that. Yeah, berry selection and dry berry selection. It's long words. Think of BA and TBA. And these wines are really precious dessert wines. You can drink them on a cheddar, for example, blue cheese, and it's beautiful combinations with food.
I thought the wine was really nice, the one we tried anyway. nice acidity. Normally, I look for acidity in a sweet wine a lot. I'm looking for a lot of acidity.
It's a question of the specific wine.
Oh, yeah. The wine was very sweet, and there was a fair old amount of acidity there to back it up. But
this is important, you know. Otherwise, the wine gets cloying, you know. Yeah. When the better the acidity balances the sweetness, the more complex the wine is.
Yep. All right, let's have a look at some of the wine regions in Austria. You've given me a map here, so I don't look quite so silly. But to be honest, I can't pronounce any of them. So we'll start with Austria's like a shape. It's almost like an aubergine shape, isn't it? It's fat at one end and then tapers in or pear.
In the west, you know, where the mountains are, we ski.
Yep.
This is the skiing resorts of Austria. Very nice Tyrol and Salzburg areas. And in the eastern federal countries, there's wine growing. And we have four big generic wine growing regions that are the federal countries of Lower Austria, which is called in German Niederösterreich.
Is Austria made up of
9 federal countries?
They're their own countries, and then they have a federal state.
Think of Germany, like Bavaria. Yeah. I don't know the organization in Britain, in the UK.
You know? Like Scotland, Ireland, and Wales.
We have 9 regions in Austria, political regions with a governor, and then they are a federal. That's the federal state of Austria.
Yep.
So 4 of these sub regions make wine.
Yep.
Niederösterreich, Lower Austria is the biggest.
How do you say that?
Niederösterreich. Lower Austria. Right. Yeah.
Yep. So even though it's at the top.
The German, lower means Nieder comes from the Danube River crossing Austria.
Okay.
I'm from Upper Austria, would be the river upwards, and it's just the river downwards. Yeah.
Okay, so it's to the west.
Yeah.
The Danube's coming from the west.
It's coming from Germany here, and then it's Lower Austria.
I'm with
you. So Lower Austria, Niederösterreich, with the very, very famous regions, sub-regions then, of Wachau, Kremstal, Kamptal, Traisental, Wagram, Weinviertel, Carnuntum, and Terminregion.
Yep.
That's the regions of Niederösterreich.
And what sort of wines they produce up there?
Usually the Danube crosses there. So it's Grüne Veltliner stronghold there.
Yep.
And the Riesling stronghold. That's the main Niederösterreich grape varieties.
So North Austria is very much white wines.
White wines, yeah. Grüne Veltliner and Riesling. Two of the regions from Niederösterreich, Terminregion and Carnuntum, we had the red wines already, the St. Laurent and the Zweigeltier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, these are the southern more southern Niederösterreich areas related to the grape, the red wine areas, which is basically Burgenland.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Burgenland is the second big Austrian wine producing federal state of Austria. So Burgenland with the Neusiedler See, with the Leiterberg, the Mittelburgenland, and the Eisenberg area.
Yep.
That's Burgenland, close to Hungary.
Yeah, okay. And each of these sub-regions that you've mentioned, they're DACs, aren't they?
DAC, they are DAC if they concentrate on one or two wine styles.
Okay.
If they want to do the whole thing, then they can stay what they are, but they are not DAC. A DAC, think of a Barolo. Barolo does Nebbiolo, yeah?
Yep.
And Brunello does Sangiovese. So if a region agrees on that, they want to do only one or two grape varieties, basically, yeah, they can become a DSC status, and they would then serve their other wines because they can grow 35 different grape varieties, but they would go to the generic region with it. So they would say, if you take a Kremstal, DSC, this is only Grüne Veltliner and Riesling. If he wants to make a Chardonnay, he has to label it Lower Austria.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay?
Lower Austria or
Niederösterreich.
Niederösterreich.
So, I said Niederösterreich, Burgenland. The third is Steiermark, Styria. This is in the south.
Yep.
And the fourth is Vienna. And Steiermark has 3.
Yep.
Weststeiermark, Südsteiermark, and Südoststeiermark, which is west, south, and southeast Steiermark.
Do you speak German or Austrian, or what's the language?
We speak German in school.
and Swiss as well, isn't
it? No. The language is German.
Okay.
Yeah? There are a few minority languages like Slovenian and so on the borders, but 95% of the Austrians, all Austrians speak German, yeah?
Okay, so this is...
So, we speak German. But then we have dialects. as you do. You know, go to Scotland or go to Wales and go to
Glasgow. You can't understand a word they say.
Yeah, we have also those dialects, but we try to speak Hochdeutsch, which means regular German in school and then on.
Is it Steiermark?
Steiermark, yeah.
Steiermark?
Yeah.
I'm going to get that. Steiermark.
Yeah.
Is that, what sort of wines do they make there?
You know, these are the most aromatic white wines of Austria. With an, they have a classic rosé also from a Blaue Wildbacher grape, the Schilcher, in the western Steiermark.
Yep.
But otherwise, it's basically aromatic white wines with Sauvignon Blanc in the lead.
Okay.
Sauvignon Blanc. They also have Tramina and Muscatella.
Yep.
And occasional Pinot Blanc and Chardonnay. But the Sauvignon is their leading grape variety. And this is one of the great Sauvignon terroirs of the world because they have shell limestone soils. So it is a great terroir for Sauvignon, and it's a great duty for us to make the world know these wines because there's little knowledge about it. It's a very new development. But you will see Sauvignons that can age forever. It's incredible terroir for Sauvignons on these calcareous soils.
I'll have to get a few bottles and try them out.
And then there's the capital, Vienna.
On your map, because I couldn't work out Vienna. I was reading about Austria this morning, and I was looking at a map, and it didn't say Vienna. It says, Wien.
Wien, it is Wien. Yeah, it's not Wein, it is Wien. Because Wein is, the German word Wein is written W-E-I-N.
Mm-hmm.
That's wine. And we pronounce it Wein, yeah? And Wien is W-I-E-N, yeah? It comes from Venia, from the wind.
Oh, nothing to do with wine.
Yeah, no. We love to pretend, but it's the wind.
Okay. On
the, etymologically, is the wind. Yeah.
Is it quite windy in Vienna?
Yeah, it's quite windy in Vienna because you know it comes from the Alps to the plains, and so it's quite windy. Yeah. So Vienna produces 612 hectares of vineyards, but which is great for a capital. You know,
it's
within the city limits. And they have also a speciality, which is the field plant. They call it gemischter Satz, mixed planting.
Yeah.
Gemischter Satz. Yeah. And gemischter Satz means that you have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 grape varieties in one block.
Yeah.
Planted together, you harvest it together, and you would bottle it after vinification. All these grape varieties together. It's not a cuvée. A cuvée means you blend after fermentation.
Yeah, so this is a field blend, isn't it?
A field blend. And this is the specialty wine of Vienna, the signature wine of Vienna.
I was reading there's these...
White also, yeah?
Yeah. I was reading that there's these taverns or... What they call green?
Heurigen, yeah? Heurigen.
What is that all about?
Yeah,
it's a wine and a, it,
you
a
know,
pub.
in history, yeah, in the 18th century, winemakers of Vienna and others, yeah, in the whole country were given the right to pour their own wine for visitors and charge them, you know, and serve cold cuts, yeah, simple food and pour their own wine. And so they became taverns, so that they not only sold their wine to on the markets, but also at the winery. This is what we do. We love doing that in Vienna on a nice day. We go out into the vineyards of Vienna, also in the Steiermark, in all wine regions, and this is wonderful. You know, it doesn't cost so much money unless it's one of the hype and VIP tourist traps. Yeah. Otherwise, you sit in the garden, or in a kind of vault when it's in the cellars, in a stube, as we call it. Then you drink his local wine. You eat a cold cut, some some pork, roast pork with horseradish and things like that. And then they are singing and they are drinking, and it's a really nice atmosphere, pubish atmosphere, yeah?
Yep.
But it's about the Heurigen, means this year's wine.
Yep.
Yeah. From the winery itself. And there's a fir, kind of a fir bunch hanging out over the door. Yeah.
Fir bunch.
Fir, from a fir tree.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they hang a kind of, you would say a bunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Out. And they see, when do you see the bunch? They say it's open. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah?
It's very nice. Yeah. We call it also Heurigen or Buschenschank. Buschen means the bunch.
Yeah.
And Schank is a tavern. Yeah.
Obviously, Austria's been making wine for a while. It sounds like you've got quite a wine culture. You drink a lot of your own wines.
We do, yeah.
Yeah. Which is surprising in Europe, because you'd expect you to drink more French, German, all sorts of wines.
In wine-producing country, it's important that the wine-producing country, the public itself, loves their own wine.
Yeah.
And then, we also import wine, of course, we do. And so we export also. Our main export markets is Germany, Switzerland, the USA. And Britain is coming now, you know. It's more or less fine dining restaurants or good wine bars that are serving Austrian wines so far, yeah.
Okay. All right then, Willy. I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris, and have fine time with Austrian wines.
I will. Cheers.